You have entered the Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source, FM, on the LMB Network.
Let freedom ring, freedom. All aboard, freedom train. Let freedom ring. Are you free to master your mind? Free to move through space or time? Free to give, free to take? Free to make another mistake? Are you free to dispute, free to believe? Free to give up, free to achieve? Free to live, free to die? Free to ask the question, why? Free to touch, free to taste? Free to take another man's place? Are you free to give up your right? Free to run, stand up and fight? Free to know, free to guess? Free to say no or say yes? Free to change your mind? Free to laugh or free to cry?
Freedom, born to be free. Liberation, set your mind free. Freedom, born to be free. Liberation, let freedom ring.
Free to be captive, free to choose. Free to win, free to lose. Free to go, free to stay. Free to say what you wanna say. Free to walk, free to run. Sit in the shade, sit in the sun. Free to see what life's all about. Free to whisper, free to shout. Free to rent, free to own. Marble countertops or stone. Free to fly like a dove. To select none of the above. Free to hold on, free to let go. Keep it in or let it show. Love, hate, cheat or play it straight.
Freedom, born to be free. Liberation, let your heart sing. Freedom, born to be free.
Lead the way, yes. Release, let go of all your anger, so you can see a brighter day, yes. Free like a remember what you're fighting for. Free to be weak or stay strong. Free to be right or be wrong. Free to do temp or to hurry. Free to do it for love or for money. Free to listen to your inner voice. To remember you have a choice. Free to take a little advice. Free to maybe think twice. Free to be the one to have courage. Don't give up, don't be discouraged. Free to vote or care less. Free to be cursed or be blessed. Free to know the truth of it all. Free to answer to the call.
Freedom, born to be free. Liberation, set your soul free. Freedom, born to be free. Liberation, let freedom ring.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Conscious Cafe inside the Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source, FM, on the LMB Network. This is Aja, founder of Conscious Living Omnimedia Group and the Children's Wellness Network. Thanks so much for stopping by. I'll be your host this afternoon inside the cafe for about an hour. If you're just joining us for the first time, we explore alternative medicine, nutrition, the environment, food safety, holistic health and wellness, life path empowerment, quality of life, and everything in between. Offering physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental fitness tools for any healing journey and for that holistic approach to health and wellness. This afternoon, we'll be joined by Dr. Marion Nessel, or Professor Marion Nessel, who is an expert in the food safety area and the intersection of environmental health. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to The Conscious Cafe inside The Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source FM.
What is environmental health science and why is it important? Imagine you have a caramel apple. Let's make it a peanut-coated caramel apple. Now, imagine all the ways that apple might cause harm to someone. The peanuts, for instance, could trigger an allergic reaction. Sugar in the caramel could increase your chances of developing diabetes or heart disease. Are the preservatives and other additives in the coating safe? Does the apple contain traces of pesticides? And were the farmers and neighbors exposed to these pesticides as the apple was being grown? Then there's the packaging the apple came in. Does it contain harmful chemicals? And did some of these get into the apple? Was anyone exposed to dangerous stuff while the packaging was being made? And for the paranoid, did the production of this caramel apple contribute to global warming and as a result increase the level of health risks around the world? On the flip side though, this caramel apple is dripping with carbohydrates and proteins and vitamins and other nutrients that your body needs. And it's not just about you. People's livelihoods and as a result their health could well depend on you eating that apple. So, should you eat the apple? Without some way of making sense of the speculation about the risks and benefits, the only thing you're likely to get is a headache. The good news is that there's help at hand. It's called environmental health science. By understanding the science behind how our environment affects our health, we can take some of the guesswork out of the decisions we make. This is incredibly important if you're procrastinating over biting into an enticing caramel apple. But it also has some bearing on one or two other issues, like how can we develop safer products? How can we curb the rise of lifestyle diseases? Or how can we benefit from the gains of technological progress without suffering the pain of unintended health impacts? And as a bonus, the science of what happens at the intersection between our bodies and the environment we live in is pretty cool, although I could be biased on that front. Environmental health science, reducing risk and increasing benefits so everyone can lead a healthier life.
It was once said to me, the things I created were never intended for my possession. So I said to myself, this too shall pass. So I had to move on.
Sometimes we get stuck like a tire in some mud, and we can't get up. Sometimes we fall down when nobody's around to help us up. There's a voice in our heads when you think you're dead that says get up. It's the will to survive and the fight to stay alive and all of those. So I said, time for me to get going. I won't let nobody hold me. Moving on, cause my will is so strong. Every day's a lesson, every night I count my blessings. I'm moving on, cause my will is so strong. I'll be moving on.
I don't know what time I gotta go. All I know is soon, and trouble may find me not at home, just an empty room. So I'm leaving
behind. So daddy, don't find me ever again. It just gotta be some kind of sort of silver line. It just gotta be, cause it's my time.
Time for me to get going now.
You're listening to The Conscious Cafe Inside the Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source FM on the LNB Network. Moving right along inside the cafe this afternoon, we'll be joined by Dr. Marion Nessel, Professor Marion Nessel, who will be sharing information with us on food safety, environmental health, and all of the above. Lots going on with our food systems, and we've explored quite a bit of it, and we'll be taking a look at a little bit more that's going on currently between nanotechnology and pesticides and GMOs and all the other things we know about or don't know about. It is very beneficial to pay attention and be conscious of what we are putting in our mouths to nourish our bodies. And oftentimes we put different things in, and they're not necessarily nourishing our bodies at all. They're just food stuff. And more and more of what we are seeing in stores today could be described as food stuff and not food at all. Definitely ways to avoid and to just be conscious of what we are purchasing and, again, putting in our bodies, because we are literally what we eat. And food is thy medicine, and all of those great sayings you heard. And many folks are coming to understand that these are closer to the truth than we realize. Stay with us. We'll be back. You're listening to The Conscious Cafe Inside the Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source FM, on the LNB Network.
Warnings from Congress and consumer groups. The agency that's supposed to protect your food supply may soon clear the way for meat and milk from cloned animals to make it to your table, some say without testing it enough.
The concern is that the FDA might rush approval and not do the studies that Congress is asking them to do.
A Senate source tells CNN the Food and Drug Administration is just days away from declaring meat and milk from cloned animals safe.
The FDA wouldn't comment on that on or off camera with us, but did say it is finalizing its own risk assessment. More than a year ago, a draft of that assessment concluded those products are safe.
What are the health risks?
We don't actually know, but we know the studies that the FDA has relied on so far can't tell you that. I suspect that it'll probably taste quite similar, but that doesn't mean that there are no changes in the milk and that there are no changes in the meat that we need to be worried about.
In a December 2006 press release, the FDA says their assessment that those meat and dairy products would be safe was peer-reviewed by a group of independent scientific experts.
There's only three peer-reviewed studies. The so-called peer review that the FDA did of its own risk assessment, two of the three people own patents on different parts of cloning process.
No comment from the FDA to that, but a representative for cloning companies says the FDA's done years of very credible testing. As for the nutrition of food from cloned animals,
it gives producers more control over the type of animals that are bred, so that theoretically some producers could have a better tasting, a better quality steak with less fat. So in that sense, it could be more helpful.
But consumer groups have another big complaint, that the FDA won't require labeling of meat and milk from clones, so we'll never know if what we're buying is from those animals or not. The FDA wouldn't respond to that, but the spokesman for the cloning industry says because cloned animal products will be so similar to those from naturally bred animals, we won't need labels. Brian Todd, CNN, Washington.
Hello, everyone. We are back. You're listening to The Conscious Cafe inside the Conscious Zone on WHPN, the Soros FM, on the LMB network. This is Aja, and we're exploring our food systems today. I have an excerpt here from Disease Proof Your Child, Feeding Kids Right, by Dr. Joel Fuhrman, MD. He's author of Eat to Live as well. And this one is Disease Proof Your Child, Feeding Kids Right. And this is an interesting section, preparing your home for eating healthfully. He says, real food is an important part of a balanced diet. Once you allow your child to consume a typical American foods diet, he will reject most, if not all, fresh produce and eat those empty calorie foods almost exclusively. Your toddler will not have the intellectual maturity to consume broccoli and peas instead of French fries and pizza for his health. The more subtle flavors of natural food can't compete. The pizza, pasta, cheese, burgers, and soft drink diet will win over the fruit, vegetable, nut diet 7 days of the week. Furthermore, the unnaturally high level of sugar, salt, and artificially heightened flavors in processed or fake foods will lessen or deaden the sensitivity of the taste buds to more subtle flavors, making natural foods taste flat. For example, the higher the salt content of your diet, the more your taste buds lose their ability to taste salt. After your taste has toned down its sensitivity to salt, salty things don't taste so salty, and your deadened taste buds have lost the ability to enjoy the subtle flavorings in more delicately flavored natural foods. Vegetables have less flavor, fruit isn't as sweet, and nuts taste like wood after just 1 month of overstimulation with industrial-designed flavors. Children eat little real food today. By real food, I mean things that are eaten in their natural state. Is it pop ice real food or ice pop or Kool-Aid or macaroni and cheese? Were these foods eaten by primitive man or other primates? Do they contain a reasonable complement of the trace elements, phytochemicals, and minerals and fibers that nature placed in real food? With so much fake food around, why would we expect our children to choose to eat vegetables, fruits, beans, and nuts, those foods that contain all the health-giving nutrients? If you are committed to your child eating healthfully, there's only one way to do it. Make your home off limits to processed food and low nutrient foods. No white flour products, no cheese, no sweeteners, no ready-to-eat cereal, no fruit juice, no chips, and no junk. So preparing your home for eating healthfully, he has a list here. Stock your home with a variety of produce, especially fresh fruits, raw vegetables, raw nuts, and seeds. Incorporate bean burgers, vegetable bean soups, and fruit-centered desserts. Replace foods of animal origin with foods of plant origin, or limit poultry to once or twice a week and red meat even less. Remove skin from poultry. Use the light meat only. Remove sugar, salt, and white flour from the home, as well as all products with these added. Use only whole grain breads and pasta. Use tomato sauce for pasta, not oil-based or cheese-based sauces. Try bean or lentil pasta instead of wheat flour pasta. Minimize the use of vegetable oils, replacing them with dressings and sauces made with avocados and whole nuts and seeds. Make delicious desserts with nuts, seeds, and avocados to encourage the consumption of healthy fats. Do not keep cheese and butter in the house. If eating dairy foods, select no-fat varieties and only eat small amounts. Replace dairy products with soy milk or almond milk and nut milk fortified with calcium and vitamin D and B12. If utilizing dairy products in your home, only use fat-free versions. Avoid eating lobster, shrimp, mollusks, catfish, swordfish, bluefish, mackerel, pike, shark, tuna, and any fish caught in questionable waters. Limit other fish to once weekly.
Eliminate fried foods and barbecued foods, both of which expose you to high levels of carcinogenic compounds produced by these high-heat cooking methods. And that's something Dr. Joel Wallach talked to us about in previous programs. Also says remove all sweet drinks, soda, and processed fruit juice from the house. Make healthy snacks available. Cherry tomatoes, raw nuts, carrots, fruits, chickpeas, corn, and raw string beans are great choices. For toddlers below the age of 2.5, be aware of the choking hazard of whole nuts and carrots. Don't be concerned if your child doesn't eat much at first, but can be difficult for parents. Rest assured, when your child actually gets hungry, he will start eating the assortment of natural foods you have set out. Eventually, your child will consume the same overall number of calories from natural foods that he was previously getting from junk foods. This approach will work even with very picky eaters, because even a relatively sparse assortment of natural foods will provide them with more nutrients than they're getting from the poor diet. Then, in a very short time, both their hunger and their variety driver will kick in to lead them to larger portions of phytochemical-rich food and eventually a wider variety of healthy foods. If you're committed to raising a healthy family without medical tragedies in their future, you must structure your lives so you do not eat in fast food restaurants. Eating outside the home should be a rare occurrence. Parents should pack their kids' lunch and plan family meals together as much as possible. Dinner together should be a time for all to model healthy eating and counter the influence of the fake food culture with good nutrition. In a home environment bursting with real food, food no longer needs to become an issue. Let your children eat as much or as little as they want. A normal child will self-regulate and consume a healthy diet given a healthy home environment. There is solid evidence to establish the ability of children to control their caloric intake and food selection. However, this does not mean that children can do this in today's toxic food environment. Children can't be expected to devise a wholesome, balanced diet when faced with so many unnatural and unhealthy choices. Nevertheless, research on this point demonstrates that when children are left alone to adjust their own caloric intake without parental control, the children maintain a very consistent level of caloric intake, even in the face of changing the types of food and caloric density of the food offered. This means that the best way to prevent overeating or undereating is to let the child be in charge of how much or how little he eats. And it goes on. So those are some tips there on disease-proofing your child, Feeding Kids Right by Dr. Joel Fuhrman, author of Eat to Live. And, you know, some of those sound pretty drastic. And I know it's not always, you know, possible to do that, make that drastic change that way. Now, some people do. Some people empty out their shelves and restock just the way that Dr. Joel Fuhrman suggests. And some people do it over time and take it in phases. And so investigate a little bit more, do a little research, and find out what will work best for you. Some of the dairy substitutes or the sugar substitutes, natural, really natural, not just ones that are termed natural, you can find at your local cooperative. And they have a lot of the alternative products that people may sometimes reach out for but can't find at regular supermarkets. Now, some of the big chains are actually carrying a lot of natural food lines now, but the cooperatives actually have a wider selection of those. And so if you have allergies or you're wanting to try substitutes for milk or dairy or whatever the case may be, they have a wider variety of those things for you to select from and try. For instance, cooperative here, Sevenanda in Atlanta, has, you know, the soy milk, the almond milk, flax milk. I mean, you name it. They have those different varieties there, and it's great because you can try all of them and find out which one has the best effect on you. Because again, some people are sensitive to soy and almond, so you would really need to try a whole lot of different things. And some people say, well, you know, I'm drinking milk and I'm fine. And some people are. But many studies have gone into some of the health concerns around dairy, especially with African Americans and different allergies that we tend to have with dairy and not even know, or soy. It's, again, with the holistic approach to health, it needs to be customized. You got to find out what your specific tolerances are, allergies are, imbalances are, so that you can map out the strategy to match your body specifically and your children. And so you can do that in a variety of ways, and we'll explore some of that as well. And I have an excerpt from Dr. Marion Nessel, and then we will go into listening to some time we spent with her inside the cafe.
Stay with us. You're listening to The Conscious Cafe, Inside the Conscious Zone, on WHPN, The Source, FM, on the LMB Network.
Freestyling by now, it's about all the people, I would say, of the African continent coming together, all tribes and all Afro-Americans to come together and meet me down by the Nile, so we can all freestyle and get freestyling to all mankind. Freestyling down by the Nile, the crocodiles that went wild. At least freestyling down by the Nile. Freestyling down by the Nile, baby. Freestyling down by the Nile, baby. Freestyling down by the Nile, baby. Freestyling down by the Nile, coming to you from the land of Oz. A chameleon has many forms, like spots on a leopard, yet lions have claws. The fire demon dragon reappears once more. As dragon takes flight, takes out everything in sight. Splash! Here comes the cosmic light. Yeah, light blinds my eyes, travels through my inner sides. Seven rays now crystallize. Freestyling, freestyling down by the Nile, yeah. Freestyling down by the Nile, crocodiles and went wild. As sure as night turns into day, ring a ring ring, I be calling on the essence, preparing myself for more lessons down by the Nile. Crocodiles wild, receiving, and that's where I'll meet her. Her name will be Sheba, from 151st Avenue. Remember cool, in 92, she used to hang out with the Lexington crew. It's a big world, it's small, equal opportunity for all. I'm at the front door, no more ping pong. See you at the power, at the hour, they're rules, dog. Let's not forget the money, it's the most important thing of all. The question is, can money buy you love? Why you living in your concrete hut? Yeah, you got the label, acting out like Clark Gable. Mic check 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Coming through, living in you. Freestyling down by the Nile. Freestyling down by the Nile. Crocodiles going wild, cause I freestyle down by the Nile. Yeah.
Freestyling down.
Freestyle.
You're listening to The Conscious Cafe inside the Conscious Zone on WHPN, The Source FM. We just heard from Focused with Freestylin' on the Nile. And previous music, we heard from K-John and Moving On, as well as our opening song, of course, by iDivine, Born to be Free. We're going to take a listen now to some time we spent inside the cafe with Dr. Marion Nestle. And just before that, we'll listen to an excerpt from a presentation she made on marketing to children.
Now, I haven't said anything about marketing to children, although that's the area of real vulnerability of food companies, because you're an adult, you get to eat anything you want, anytime you want it. It's one of the great things about being an adult, but with kids it's different. And at the end of December in 2005, the Institute of Medicine came out with a really extraordinary report on food marketing to children and youth, in which they documented the extent of the research enterprise whose job it is to teach companies how to market to kids. This research enterprise exists. It documented the methods that these companies use to teach food companies how to market to kids, the amount of money that they spend on advertising to kids, the sales that result, and the effects on children's food preferences and on their health. Now, there's a big debate about how much money is spent on marketing to kids. This report said $7 or $8 billion. The Federal Trade Commission has just come out with a report that says it's slightly under $2 billion. I don't care how much money it is. Those numbers are too big for me to understand anyway. So I like to break it down into smaller things, mere millions that I can understand. And here is one example from last year. $32.8 million spent by Kellogg just to advertise Cheez-Its. Just Cheez-Its. Anytime you see a nationally advertised food product in a supermarket, it's got a budget like this attached to it. That adds up after a while. And a lot of that money is spent on marketing to kids either directly or indirectly. Now, there are three reasons why marketers want to market to kids. The first is brand loyalty. The idea, if you get a kid hooked on Coca-Cola early in life, that child will choose Coca-Cola throughout life and will never touch a Pepsi. The second one, if you've got kids or grandkids, you know what this one is. It's the pester factor, and that's what the industry calls it, the pester factor. And all you have to do is see this in action is to take a two-year-old to a supermarket. My friends who have young children, which I don't anymore, tell me that they don't have television in their house, they never let their kids watch television, they have never taken their child to McDonald's, and yet their two-year-old knows what the Golden Arches are, knows who Ronald McDonald is, and wants to go to McDonald's, even though that kid's never been there. That's brilliant marketing. How do they do that? It's in the air. The third reason is the one that really matters, I think, and that is you want kids to think that they're supposed to eat kids' cuisine. They're supposed to eat their own foods, unidentified food objects in funny colors with cartoons on the package. Kids aren't supposed to eat what their parents are eating. They're supposed to eat their own foods. And what this does is transfer responsibility and authority for what kids are eating to the kids themselves, away from their parents. It's extremely undermining of parental authority. And it, I think, is reason enough to be very, very concerned about marketing to children. Now, as a result of complaints like this and a lot of pressure and concerns about childhood obesities, all of the big food companies have said that they're going to cut back on marketing and that they're going to change the products that they're marketing to children. Whether these promises have any merit to them remains to be seen. I'm dubious and skeptical. And part of the reason for my skepticism has to do with what I'm seeing all over the world. I did a lot of international travel last year, and I don't know what other people buy when they go to India, but I buy Kellogg cereals. And I went to a very, very small grocery store in New Delhi and was astounded to see this particular product. When I bought it, at the cash register, they handed me a video game. This is clearly being marketed to children. But the part that just astounded me was what was on the back, because it said getting your kid to eat breakfast can be a big problem. And this Choco's cereal has the fiber of 2 chapatis, the calcium of 2 glasses of milk, and 11 vitamins and minerals. And so it's being marketed deliberately to busy mothers as a substitute for the culturally appropriate diets that have been eaten in India for millennia. I thought this was interesting marketing. I was in Adelaide in Australia, and there was a supermarket in the basement of my hotel, oddly enough, and I couldn't believe the number of products in the store that used Shrek as an advertising gimmick. All of these products were junk food. They were candies and snacks of different kinds. The supermarket chain had made an arrangement with DreamWorks because the Shrek movie was just opening. And the closest thing to a health food that came in was Fruit Loops that had the goodness of vegetables. Now, the Shrek business is interesting because our government, in the form of the Department of Health and Human Services, made a deal with DreamWorks last year to use Shrek as a promoter of exercise in children. That's one of the things that food companies do, is they try to divert your attention from what goes into the mouth to the caloric expenditure and activity. And mind you, I'm in favor of activity. I really am. But I think that food matters as well. And so they had this alliance with DreamWorks and Shrek running this exercise program. And the New York Times was so upset about it that they wrote an editorial about it saying, if you eat the kind of food that Shrek is promoting, you're going to look like Shrek. And you're going to need to get out there and do some exercise.
We are joined this afternoon by Professor Marion Nessel, who is Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University. Her degrees include a PhD in Molecular Biology and an MPH in Public Health Nutrition, both from the University of California, Berkeley. She joins us this afternoon to share her wisdom and insights on food and politics and everything in between. Welcome, Professor Nessel, to the program.
Oh, glad to be here.
I found you online. We've done a lot of work here in Atlanta around food safety issues, and I was so excited to find foodpolitics.com and learn more about you, and looking forward to reading the books. Now, your latest book is Eat, Drink, and Vote, and that's number 8, correct?
I think it's something like that. But it's really different than any of my other books because it's mostly cartoons. It's got about 250 cartoons in it. It's really fun.
Please share more about your journey into this work. Did you know early this was your path? Did you kind of fumble on it? How did that come about?
Well, I was teaching cell and molecular biology at a undergraduate college, my first teaching job. And I was given a nutrition course to teach. The department needed one, and it was my turn to deal with human biology. And so I was given this class to teach. It was like falling in love. I never looked back. It was just so much fun to teach about food and nutrition as compared to teaching about molecular and cell biology, where students' eyes just glazed over because everything was so abstract. Everybody gets it about food and nutrition because everybody eats.
What really struck you as far as the intersections between environmental, health, and politics?
Well, I think that way. And in my very first nutrition class, which I have to say was about 40 years ago now, we were going all the way from basic science to politics. And what I liked so much about it was that it was just a terrific way to teach undergraduate biology. Any undergraduate student could read original papers in the nutrition research literature and immediately think about the whatever methods, issues there were regarding those papers. And they were all ready to design their own studies right from the beginning. And so it was just a pleasure to teach. I thought it was the best way of teaching undergraduate biology. And I moved from there to a medical school. And I thought it was really useful to learn about clinical nutrition at that place. And then I went to Washington and worked in the nutrition policy area and then ended up at NYU.
Mm-hmm. So it was a really kind of natural progression, just those overlapping and intersections.
Well, looking back, it's what happened at the time. I didn't know where I was headed.
Now, did you squeeze in a family?
Oh, yes. Actually, I had the family first.
Got that out the way.
And the family first.
Okay.
As I describe it, my children are older than I am.
Yes.
I can't believe how old they are. But I went to graduate school with two small children.
Okay. Wow. Amazing. Just amazing. I really enjoyed reading the bio and all of the work that you've done. And it's just really amazing. And I thank you for staying committed and focused and for the continuous contribution that you're offering. And I know there's just so much more ahead for you, especially with everything happening these days on legislation and so forth. Share a little bit more about, you know, more work on advocacy and legislation and things that maybe people should be looking out for, paying attention to over the course and of late.
Well, my area of interest is food politics and policy, and not a day goes by when some dramatic event isn't occurring. Though the one that I'm dealing with right now has to do with the Food and Drug Administration's recent proposal to consider hydrogenated fats that contain trans fat to be a food additive instead of just assumed to be safe. And there's just been a lot of interest in that. I think the FDA is doing it because it can do it and because it's pretty much of a no-brainer to get trans fats out of the food supply. But then we're in the middle of Congress dealing with a farm bill, which has everything to do with not only agricultural policy, but also welfare policy in the United States, because food stamps are part of the farm bill. Those are the big ones now. Mm-hmm. And then all the anti-obesity measures like soda taxes, and then there's genetically modified foods and the recent election in Washington State to try to get them labeled. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one thing after another. The newspapers are full of it.
Yeah. So how do you recommend folks, you know, some folks are following it closely, and then there's others who are kind of crossing over or just learning about it. That's what I find, at least in our work, and just trying to keep everyone abreast of what's going on. But in terms of your work specifically, what is actually the best way that you try to assist folks in just staying on top of what's happening?
The reason that I wrote Eat, Drink, Vote with all these funny cartoons in it was as an introduction to the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a summary of all of the other books that I've written, with a very condensed text, lavishly illustrated in glorious color. They did a beautiful production job on this book, and it's in paperback. It's not very expensive, mm-hmm. and I hope lots of people will read it.
Okay.
Because it's fun, if nothing else.
Did you intentionally do that? Did someone suggest it to you? Why different this time?
Well, it grew a lot. It grew logically out of my most recent book, which came out last year, called "Why Calories Count," which is a quite serious, but I hope accessible introduction to the whole question of calories, what they are, how they work in society. And the book had a couple of cartoons in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowed to just reproduce cartoons. You have to get permission from the copyright holder. And that put me in touch with the owner of the copyrights for two of the several cartoons that were in the book. And in the course of our discussion, she said, "Are you the person who wrote Food Politics," which was my first major book in this area? It came out in 2002. And I said, "Guilty as charged."
Yes.
And she said, "Well, you know, I've always wanted to do a book about food politics using our cartoonists' cartoons,"
mm-hmm.
because she represents the work of about 50 cartoonists. And I thought, oh, what a good idea. And I wanted a project that would be kind of fun and
yes.
not too difficult. And that would summarize a lot of my thinking about food policy and politics for a much broader audience than I'm used to dealing with, because Most of my books are academic and heavily footnoted. Mm-hmm. This one is too, but not so heavily.
Okay, so we've got nutrition and clinical practice. We've got food politics, how the food industry influences nutrition and health. And 2002, as
yeah,
you said.
And what to eat. You know, and all of these are pretty big books
yes.
that require a commitment from anybody who's going to be reading them.
Okay.
A pretty serious commitment to sit down with them and, you know, really think through the issues. So the cartoon book is just a lot easier to deal with, and I'm hoping that high school students will read it and people who are interested but are newcomers mm-hmm. to the whole question will read it and, have fun with it and take it seriously and
yes.
learn some things.
Yes, absolutely.
And then want to do some things even more.
So now I want to talk more about children and youth, because a lot of your work does cover that as well, from marketing to children, just to all the things that are happening with them. So share more a little bit about, you know, what's on the front lines today, most of concern, and how parents can, you know, really kind of counter that. And high school student age students, what would you want them to pay most attention to?
Well, I think there's plenty that high school students can do. First of all, you teach them how to read labels. And how to do and how to become informed consumers in supermarkets. And my book, What to Eat, deals with exactly those issues. But I think the big issue for parents is marketing of junk foods and sodas to kids, because it's so difficult for parents to counter a food environment in which the food industry spends billions of dollars every year directly targeting their children. For advertising mm-hmm. and for messages about what they should recognize as foods that they're supposed to eat, what they're supposed to ask their parents for, and so forth and so on. And even the most diligent parent really can't counter that without a very conscious structuring of what goes on in the household.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I talk to a lot of parents who swear that they don't have TVs in the house, they never let their children watch television, they've never taken their children to McDonald's. These are little kids. They've never taken them to McDonald's, and yet their two-year-old recognizes the Golden Arches.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's brilliant marketing. And for many parents, it's really difficult to fight that. You're fighting a whole society on your own. That's asking a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, very good. And so there's also what I think is really great. You also touch on pets, pet food politics. Talk about
yes.
that a little bit. That's a
yeah,
biggie.
That was a book that came out of a book that I wrote with my co-author called Feed Your Pet Right, which was a book not really about feeding pets, but about the pet food industry. It doesn't have a very good title. But it's a book about the pet food industry. And just at the time that we got the contract to write that book, there was this enormous pet food recall of about 100 different brands of pet food because they were found to be contaminated with an industrial chemical called melamine that was making cats and dogs sick. That happened 3 weeks after they got the contract, and so I started following that very closely, and that summer when I sat down to really get busy on the book, I thought I would write that piece of it first, what had happened with the recall, because it had a lot of important ramifications for human food safety.
Yes.
For one thing, so much pet food was produced in the same place, and that surprised everybody, because that manufacturing plant made the cheapest pet foods in the United States and also some of the most expensive. And it raised the question of what was the difference, and not much, as it turns out. And then it was so hard to trace the source of the chemical. It turned out to have happened in China. And so it had to do with international trade. And then I thought if we had a food safety system that was unable to protect cats and dogs, we couldn't count on that system for protecting people either.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that turned out to be absolutely correct, because within just a few months, melamine was found to show up in a lot of milk products throughout the world, again with the source in China at that time. So I wrote a chapter on the pet food recall that turned out to be so long that it became its own separate book.
I see.
And that book is called Pet Food Politics. It came out in 2007.
Very good. I'm sure lots of folks grateful for that one. I know plenty. Briefly about, there's a Dr. Joel Wallach who does a little bit of work on minerals. And what struck me about him was he was originally a veterinarian. And he talks about diseases and things that we've been able to overcome because of mineral supplementation for animals. And then he became a physician and started to see some correlations there. And with the environment and things that are happening on the environment, there's a big thing about mineral deficiencies in the environments and the food and the soil and so forth. So just wanted to get any thoughts you might have on that area.
Well, pet foods are governed by rules about their nutritional content. And most of the studies that have looked at the nutritional content of pet food say that what's on the label is actually what's in the product. So that's not a huge issue. You know, I know that there's this idea that foods today are much less nutritious than they were 50 or 100 years ago, but those studies are very difficult to do because we don't have very good baseline data for the nutritional quality of foods. There's not a lot of evidence that Americans are vitamin or mineral deficient. I mean, that's the kind, minerals, vitamin and mineral deficiencies are the kinds of things that come with serious starvation, mm-hmm. who really don't have enough to eat and don't have enough of a variety of foods to eat. If anything, the problem in the United States is that people are eating too much.
So I just wanted to touch on also a diagram that I saw. I think it's by Phil Howard, Michigan State, I think it is, and he has this great diagram of all of the acquisitions, big company buying little organic, local, natural companies that really have food integrity and changing ingredients. And so I just wanted to get your thoughts on some of that, the acquisitions that are going on with agribusiness and Monsanto's and all of those folks.
Yeah, well, we have increasing concentration in every aspect of the food supply in the United States, and that's a trend that's been going on for many years now, because companies have to grow in order to meet the demands of Wall Street and their investors and stockholders. And you can grow in one of several ways. You can grow by expanding sales. You can also grow by mergers and acquisitions. And so that tendency has been one that we've seen a lot of. The organic area is kind of interesting because it's the fastest growing segment of the food supply. In general, food sales are stagnant across the board, or they just barely keep up with the increase in population. But there's no real growth. I mean, people can only eat so much. Even if they're overeating, they can only eat so much. Mm-hmm. So the food industry is limited in what it can sell. And it's very competitive because it's so limited and we have a huge overabundance of food available in the country. But organics are one of the exceptions. And the growth rate has been much, much higher than the growth rate in the regular food industry. And so obviously big food companies are going to look at organic companies as something that they're going to want to mm-hmm. pick up mm-hmm. because they're growth areas. So most of the major big food companies have bought organic brands of one kind, or organic or natural brands. So Coca-Cola bought Honest Tea, and Kellogg bought Kashi, and so forth.
Right.
And they're all doing that.
Okay. All right. Just a couple more thoughts on some of the issues that I know are coming or we talk about a lot. Genetic engineering, of course, nanotechnology and pesticides. I want to get your thoughts on the order of importance there or order of danger there and how we can pay more attention to what's happening with those.
The uh-huh. order you want to throw cloning into that too?
Oh, yes, let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, your question is about the emerging technologies in food production, and these would include biotechnology, nanotechnology, and cloning, all of which we have with us already, and none of which is particularly regulated. And how worried we should be about them, I really have no idea. Mm. It's very hard to know. The genetically modified foods have been with us for about 20 years now, and roughly 90% of the corn, soybeans, cotton, and sugar, mm-hmm. sugar beets mm-hmm. grown in the United States, are genetically modified. And a lot of people are really worried about it for one reason or another, and the reasons vary greatly. And I think a lot of the problems with genetically modified foods would be solved if they were labeled. But the food industry is absolutely opposed to it and is willing to sink millions and millions and millions of dollars into fighting any attempts to label them. Nanotechnology are these really, really small molecular-sized particles. They're in all kinds of foods and food packaging, and almost nothing is known about their effects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we have cloning animals for quite a while, and there is meat from the offspring of cloned animals in the food supply. But again, it's not labeled, so you would have no way of knowing whether you're eating it or not.
Okay, and then any pesticides? Pesticides.
Well, pesticides are there. Any industrial agricultural production is using pesticides and herbicides. Very, very difficult to study because we consume them in very small amounts. We know they're harmful to farm workers. That's very clear. But what happens to us when we eat them, we really have no idea.
We have been speaking with Professor Marion Nessel, and she is with us this afternoon sharing her insights and wisdom on food politics. And where can folks find the latest book or all your books, Eat, Drink, Vote?
Well, I run a website called foodpolitics.com, and everything's on it. My life is an open book at foodpolitics.com.
Okay. And are any emails or phone numbers for folks to learn more, or all of it's on the website?
It's all on the website.
Okay.
I also Twitter. I do Twitter at Marion Nessel.
Okay, very good. Any last words for listeners or any other things you'd like to share with folks today?
Just get involved. You know, every time you make a decision about what you eat, you're voting with your fork for the kind of food supply you want. And also get involved in food politics, first of all, because it's fun, and second of all, because it might do a lot of good.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Continued success to you, Professor Nessel. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
Well.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Conscious Cafe and our explorations of food safety this afternoon with Dr. Marion Nessel. Lots of different perspectives she had there, especially on minerals, which I found interesting. So keep doing your research, checking things out for yourself, and taking note of the emerging technologies in our food system today, as well as some of the studies and so forth out there, so that you can begin to make or continue to make conscious choices each and every day. We'll do a little bit more explorations of environments as well. And, you know, we talked about what we're exposing ourselves to in terms of nourishing our bodies. And oftentimes we think of food, but not so much the other things that are getting in through skin. And as that is the biggest organ in the body, it's absorbing and receiving information all the time. And so really great to pay attention to what's getting in on multiple levels, and we'll do some more explorations on that. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon in the Side the Conscious Zone and the Conscious Cafe on WHPN, the Source FM. Want to hear you here same time, same place next week as we continue our explorations inside the Conscious Zone. Take good care, be well, and continue to celebrate the power of conscious choice. Conscious Living Omnimedia Group, healing humanity through media on the LMB Network.